This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, and even an online store with the Squarespace Commerce feature. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TREK6. And also by TrekFan. TrekFan isn't just a Star Trek fan club, it's a challenge. You'll explore new places, learn new things, and collaborate with other fans to solve puzzles, complete real-life mission objectives, and win great prizes. To face your first challenge and find out more, head on over to TrekFan.org.
This is J.G. Hertz, the General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as always, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Now, Matthew, I feel like there's something between us today. Like, I want to talk to you about Deep Space Nine, but you're wearing your ablative armor suit. I feel like I just can't get through.
Yeah, Chris, I'm sorry. It's been one of those kind of days. I just had to put it up and just didn't want anybody getting through. In fact, hold on. I'm going to cloak real quick. I should be invisible to you now. Can you see me?
Oh, you are. I mean, I can still see Sub-Commander T'Rul over there in the corner pressing the button to cloak you, but I can't see you anymore.
Oh, good, good. Okay, well, that's working then. I'm the only one who should be cloaked right now. She does not have a cloak. She did not get one. I won this one in poker from Thomas Riker.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, because of the Treaty of Algerine, Matthew cannot actually be cloaked unless he's cloaked by an official Romulan officer.
Man, they are such a pain to have around, but luckily she's hot, so I'm okay with it.
All right. So today, as we're talking about ablative armor, we're going to talk about the USS Defiant. And, you know, as Sisko says, she may have flaws, but she has teeth. And I don't think anyone can deny the fact that the Defiant has teeth.
Chris, I'm completely with you. I actually think that the motto of the Defiant was stolen from one of those other universes, the BSG universe. And really its motto is, don't frack with me.
Exactly. Just like Sisko. I mean, Sisko and this ship are like twins, right? They have the same attitude.
Sisko is, I punched Q, and his ship is, don't frack with me. So, I mean, those two to go together, this is not a guy you want to mess with.
That's right. Or a ship you want to mess with.
Exactly.
Well, before we talk about the teeth that the Defiant has, why don't we start our discussion by talking about the addition of the Defiant to the show. Now, the Defiant shows up during the search, the first part of the search, the season 3 premiere episode. And I love the introduction where they're on the station and they're like, I'm detecting some kind of field. It's really, really close. And then the Defiant decloaks and everyone's like, that looks like a Federation design. And I love that Sisko sneaks up on his own crew in this cloaked warship.
Well, and it was a lot of fun. You know, we'd never seen a starship with a cloaking device. Definitely they're checking it out to see how well the cloak works at that point. And when that ship decloaked, I don't know about you, but I automatically fell in love with the design. I really like the design of the Defiant. Something about it, you know, it said this is a Federation starship, but at the same time, it did say this is a ship that you're not going to want to mess with, and it is not your daddy's starship. You know, it's not palatial. It doesn't look like the Hilton. This is going to be more like a submarine in space.
Right. Now, when you say that it says Starfleet design, you're not talking about the actual labeling, which we will eventually see in the remastered Blu-ray edition, where it says designed in California by Starfleet, right there on the hall.
Right. Designed at Starfleet headquarters. No.
It's just like every Apple product says on it somewhere, designed in California by Apple.
Right, even the box you get it in says that. So when Cisco was opening the big box that this was in, it was on the side, created in Starfleet headquarters, San Francisco.
Exactly. But the actual introduction of a ship like this to the show, I think depending on where you stand on Deep Space Nine as a concept, this can be seen as a natural addition to the evolving storyline of Deep Space Nine, especially when you go back to the end of season two, to the Jem'Hadar, the episode called the Jem'Hadar, and you see the USS Odyssey, the Galaxy class starship, being destroyed. You know, you feel like we need something to defend ourselves against this threat. Or on the other side of it, you could see it as an admission of failure by the writers that setting an entire series on a space station with nothing more than these little runabouts to scoot around wasn't working. Now, of course, I see it as a natural addition to the storyline and something that opened up the storytelling possibilities for the writers. But did you ever see it, Matthew, in any way as an admission that the original concept of the show wasn't working?
I don't think that it was the original concept wasn't working. In some ways, I feel like this felt very planned out, like as if they'd always known that they were going to kind of go this direction. You know, even the creators, Ira Stephen Barry, talked about the idea that they knew that they were going to be moving into the Dominion storyline. There wasn't going to be a war yet, but they were going to be having this threat. And they were going to need something that would be able to stand up to these Jem'Hadar soldiers, these cruisers that you had seen, you know, just the normal Jem'Hadar fighters. This wasn't going to be something that a runabout was going to be able to take care of. And so the station was going to need something to defend itself. And I think we all saw pretty clearly when the Odyssey was destroyed just how powerful the Dominion was. I mean, you know, we'd all seen, and I kind of think in some ways that the creators of Deep Space Nine enjoyed basically destroying the Enterprise and showing just how deep right. that design is and saying, look, if we can destroy basically the Enterprise, we're going to need something that can really stand up to these guys. And so I think they set that up well and they give us a ship that can do that. Like all things I thought was interesting in Deep Space Nine, It's really not a ship though that is perfect. It's got a lot of issues that need the chief's attention.
That's right. Well, we need something for O'Brien to do, and something for him to kick, and something for him to curse at, right?
Exactly.
But you mentioned that you love the design of the ship, and then we're talking about how the Odyssey is destroyed, and so yes, the Defiant, it has its problems, it has its flaws, but the structural design, the shape of the ship, is not one of those flaws. And as you said, you know, the Ira Stephen Bear, it's on the season 3 DVD extras where he talks about them needing something to counter that Dominion threat. And, you know, he says, what are we going to fight them with? Shuttlecrafts? And of course, they have the runabouts as well. But the runabouts, for me, they're kind of like the SUV of Starfleet ships, right? Like if you picture on the highway, cars going down the highway, and you've got different types of cars. And of course, you've got sports cars, but you've got the big lumbering SUV, especially on American highways. Runabouts, they're kind of like that. It's like the overblown shuttlecraft. And you know, they're great for what they're designed for, but they're not designed for fighting. And then when we talk about the Odyssey and we talk about how the design of the Galaxy Class Starship always bothered me a little bit. That gigantic neck coming up to the saucer, and the huge deflector dish on the front, and you know, that's a point of vulnerability for sure. And then the nacelles. It's like Starfleet ships are not designed for battle. They're sitting ducks for any kind of enemy that is going to fight you with not by the same rules of engagement that Starfleet would. You know, they're not gonna just target your engines and disable you. They're gonna actually destroy your ship. Well, you need something that is going to minimize the point of attack for your enemy. So the Defiant, being designed to counter the Borg threat, they said, look, we've got to get rid of every point of vulnerability. So let's make this thing small. Let's make it flat. Let's wrap the nacelles in armor. And let's make it maneuverable. And that's what we get here. And it's really the perfect design for where the Deep Space Nine story was headed at that point.
Well, and I think it's something that you were just talking about, the kind of issues that you see with, say, the Enterprise D. The Defiant and the Enterprise E really take into account and change it completely. I mean, the Enterprise E on the same side is also almost more like a warship. It's sleek. In its design. It's got, you know, phaser banks everywhere. It's got quantum torpedo bays everywhere. You know, so the Defiant and the Enterprise E really made to be able to protect Starfleet and the Federation, while at the same time being able, you know, Enterprise E to be able to explore. The Defiant is made for one thing. She's made for kicking ass.
Right. And I just look at the names of the classes of ship. I mean, the Enterprise E is a sovereign class ship. You know, we are going to remain sovereign. The Borg is not going to take over. And the Defiant class, the same thing. You know, we are going to stand defiantly against that Borg threat. Now, interestingly, Ronald D. Moore originally wanted to call the Defiant the USS Valiant, which is a name that does get used later on in the episode called Valiant, when there's the Red Squad group that is on a Defiant class ship called Valiant. But the reasoning for not calling it the Valiant was that there was already the Voyager, and you don't want to have V and V, two ships starting with V. But obviously the Defiant, the backstory of the ship, the fact that Sisko was part of this project to build a warship to counter the Borg threat after, you know, he definitely has a vendetta against the Borg because his wife was killed in the Battle of Wolf 359. Defiant is absolutely the right name for this ship, not Valiant. I don't like that idea, personally, to be honest, but Defiant is the perfect name for this ship.
I think you're right, Chris. I can't think really of another name that suits the ship so much. Just thinking about the idea of the ship, it's a defiant little ship. You know, think of that line in First Contact where Riker says to Worf, "Tough little ship," and Worf says, "Little." It's a great name for a ship that is meant to lay waste to the enemy, like the Borg, and you know, it holds its own in that battle in First Contact, and so that's really interesting to see as well. And I'm glad that they went with Defiant and not Valiant as well. I think it sounds tougher and meaner, it sounds defiant. And I like it.
It sounds like the ship. You're talking about First Contact reminded me, you know, of the Defiant banking in, swerving around, attacking that Borg cube. And then I'm thinking about the many engagements during the Dominion War, which we'll talk about a few of them later. But when the Defiant fires its weapons, it's almost like a video game ship, right? It's like, you know, the Enterprise and these other starships, they're like these big lumbering ships, and, you know, they have to say, you know, fire aft torpedoes or fire forward phaser banks. And then it's very calculated, and it always feels like the weapons firing is under control. And with the Defiant, it's just like there's some kind of weapon flying out of this ship in every direction. It's like you're in a video game and you're tapping X, X, X over and over, and you're just blasting your way through all the enemies. And it's very unusual for Star Trek.
Yeah, I always liked the fact that Defiant has those pulse phasers that look and feel more like you're pressing a video game button, you know, and you're firing. Yeah. I think that that was a really smart idea. It seemed, too, like, just what a great idea, because it seemed to actually cause more damage, you know, in the first place.
Right.
And it
they blow up enemy ships much, much faster. You know, we talked about, which episode was it we talked about on the Ready Room, but we were talking about the Defiant, and we actually called that episode of the Ready Room, "This Ship Can Blow Stuff Up," because that pretty much sums up the Defiant in these battles. It just blows stuff up in the blink of an eye.
Yeah. And, you know, too, it's also got the quantum torpedoes as well. This ship is armed to the teeth. And I think it's great that it makes sense that, you know, Starfleet is about exploration and peace. But as we've seen over and over again in Star Trek, there is a need to protect themselves. And with enemies like the Borg or the Dominion, who have ships that are bred and made for destruction, the Federation needs to be able to protect itself by having ships that are made for destruction. And, you know, Deep Space Nine shows us the attack wings, and they have attack fighters. You know, a little bit like kind of like a Star Wars. They have these fighters that are small, you know, 1-2-man vehicles. But you need a ship like this.
Yeah, it made sense. Although that time when they called over the Defiant and they said Cisco Red 5 standing by, I thought that was a little bit mild. It kind of crossed the line a little
bit. Yeah, it was a nice homage to Star Wars. But having Cisco be Red 5, he's not Luke Skywalker. So it was a little, yeah, you're right. Just a little too far, guys.
While we're talking about other differences in the ship, though, going back to our introduction and my jokes about you, this ship is the first and, as far as I know, still the only Starfleet ship that had ablative armor built into the design of the ship. And I thought ablative armor made really good sense, and it seems like something that should be on every starship.
Especially just really key points. You know, having a blade of armor, you know, your nacelles made of a blade of armor, you know, something like an Enterprise E or, you know, the new Aventine or something like that. Having a blade of armor around key areas like engineering and, you know, it's interesting because, you know, that heavy armor is really based off of battleship designs that would have very thick, heavy armor over the magazines of the ship, over the engineering sections of these battleships. And so that really does come from a naval tradition. It doesn't make sense that you wouldn't build every starship with a blade of armor if you're trying to protect your people as they're exploring the great unknown. Maybe it's just really expensive, but, you know, you don't use money in the 24th century, so...
Well, but the economics of the future are somewhat different, Matthew.
That's true, and they just work to better themselves and the rest of the Federation, and so it shouldn't really matter what they cost. So I demand a blade of armor, Federation Council.
Well, you know, like Lily said, you know, it took her 7 months just to scrape up enough a blade of armor to cover the cockpit of the Phoenix.
Tritanium is hard to find, but seriously, come on, guys. But yeah, I thought that this is definitely something, again, where they're just kind of pushing the envelope and giving you something new about Star Trek. You know, we've always seen just the exploration, but we've never seen what it means for the Federation to really protect itself, defend itself, in the way that any empire really has to, or any republic or any democracy. You know, you do have to protect yourself from those that would want to see your downfall. And
right, just any society in general at some point is going to have to protect itself. I mean, look at the Baku in Insurrection. You know, they're a very peaceful planet, and they feel like they're isolated from everything. They're in the brighter patch, but yet, you know, the Sona came back for them. So, yeah, any situation, you're going to have to defend yourself at some point. And it's overly idealistic to think that you could ever be purely about science or exploration, and that you would never need to have warships like the Defiant. But so, Matthew, let's talk about stories a little bit. Now, we've talked about the fighting capabilities of the Defiant and some of its engagements in the Dominion War and, you know, how strong the ship is. But, you know, this ship is not exclusively about fighting. It's definitely a warship, definitely made for battle. But what it did on Deep Space Nine is that it facilitated the telling of a number of stories that would not have been possible otherwise. And these are stories that had nothing to do with war. They didn't have to do with defeating enemies in battle. It's just the fact that the Defiant as a ship was able to get our characters into certain places in the Gamma Quadrant, or it was able to transport our characters from point A to B, and it was able to do so more quickly and more safely than a runabout would be able to do. Plus, a runabout can only carry a few people, whereas the Defiant can actually carry a larger portion of our crew. Now, the Defiant appeared in 62 episodes of DS9, and there were actually, from the time that it came on the show after The Search Part 1, there were 127 episodes of Deep Space Nine from that point moving forward. So the Defiant appeared in roughly half of those episodes, but it wasn't actually the centerpiece of so many of those episodes. But let's talk about some of the key stories that were facilitated by the Defiant that don't necessarily have to do with war at first. So tell me one memorable story for you that involved the Defiant.
You know, for me, Chris, one of the episodes that I always think of when I think of the Defiant is actually Children of Time.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Traveling back to the station, and you know, Dax really wants to explore this planet, and they get thrown back in time because of this strange temporal anomaly surrounding the planet, and they meet these generations of people that have grown up because the Defiant was thrown back in time, and everyone's gotten married. And
well, those people, it's weird because in a way, those people are their descendants.
Right, exactly. Yeah,
ancestors, I guess, if you look from the perspective of where they are in the timeline going back and forth. But ultimately, they are the descendants of the Defiant crew. Yeah.
But I, you know, that's just a great episode. It's a fun sci-fi idea. And of course, it'll be copied in E2 or E squared, the Enterprise episode.
To some extent, yeah. Yeah.
And so, but I really have always liked this episode. I know that for you, you'd said that you didn't like it the first time you saw it, but I think you're a fan now.
Yeah, this episode is interesting for me. When it first aired, I hated this episode. I thought, like, what the hell are you guys doing? This doesn't feel like Deep Space Nine. It just visually, it doesn't look like Deep Space Nine. I don't like this story. It's just weird. But that was when it first aired. Now, as you know, recently, and anyone who wants to hear my thoughts on it can go and listen to the episode of The Ready Room that we did on Children of Time. I love this episode now, and it's just a matter of maturity for me, like where I am in my life. Where I am in my life now, there are many things about this episode that really connect with me. And at the time when it first aired, I had not had any of those experiences yet, and I kind of missed the entire point of that episode. So, but it's a wonderful episode of Deep Space Nine, and it only happens because of the Defiant. I mean, it could have happened with a runabout, I suppose, but not really, because a runabout can't carry that many people. The Defiant really needed to be there in order for that episode to take place.
Well, Chris, you asked me for an episode What's an episode for you that when you think of the Defiant, you think, oh man, I loved it in this episode?
Well, let's see. Of course, Children of Time would have probably been my very first choice as well. And since you stole that one from me there, Matthew, I'm going to have to choose another one here. Okay, we're trying to think of ones that like really requires the Defiant. Like it couldn't have happened with anything else. And I think maybe Trials and Tribulations is one for me. Again, yes, you could make the argument that that episode could have happened with a runabout, but, you know, really, the Defiant had gone to Cardassia to pick up the Orb of Time, bring it back to the station. I don't think you really want to go to Cardassian space in a runabout. And there's something about the Orb of Time combined with the Defiant and the properties of the Defiant that allowed the ship to be thrown back in time to Station K7 and give us that wonderful episode combining the original series Chaos with DS9.
I definitely like this episode. There's probably not an episode of Deep Space Nine I've probably seen more. You know, it's the quintessential classic Star Trek episode. It is the closest that anybody ever got to doing, I think, a TOS episode, because they actually get to do a TOS episode with the crew of the Enterprise. And just a wonderful, beautiful love letter to fans. If you want to see a love letter to fans, see Trials and Tribulations. Don't ever watch that other love letter to fans that we shall not speak of for Enterprise. This is definitely
the episode whose name shall not be spoken.
Exactly. I was thinking of, Chris, just another episode for me that I really think of when I think of the Defiant. And it is a little bit more of a war episode, but I think of it in the Way of the Warrior, when the Defiant is transporting the Cardassian to Tapa Council to Deep Space Nine, and they have to fight their way through the Klingon forces. And this is one of the big chances where you get to see the Defiant in some serious action and really making a stand against some ships that we've seen before fight our heroes, in the Next Generation and, of course, in the original series with the Klingons. And watching it go up against these Klingon forces is pretty awesome.
Right. Yeah. Well, it gives you a frame of reference, right? Because we've seen other Starfleet ships fighting Klingon ships, and we know what that's like and how that goes. So then seeing the Defiant doing it, it drives home the power of the ship in a way that, you can't make any mistake of how this ship differs from other Starfleet ships. So yeah, that's a good one. And again, it was important to bring the Tapa Council to DS9, and they could have never done that in a runabout. So the Defiant was very necessary to facilitate those elements. A few others quickly, just to name a few. Of course, there's the fun episode of Thomas Riker stealing the Defiant so he can use it to attack a planet in the Oriya system as part of the Maquis. Once again, the Maquis really getting their due in DS9, despite the fact that they were actually created for another series. But DS9 does things with the Maquis, and the Defiant plays a part in that. This is something you could have done with the runabout, but in Destiny, they used the Defiant to do this joint project between the Federation, Cardassia, and Bajor, where they're trying to create that communication channel through the wormhole. And that's important as well.
Oh, yeah, great episode with Natima, right?
Right.
That Quark is in love with.
Yes.
Excellent episode.
So that's one. What else? Jake gets stuck on the front lines of the war in Nor the Battle to the Strong. Sisko uses the Defiant to retrieve his son.
I would say probably one of the most memorable Defiant episodes, for me, probably the most memorable, has to be, though, The Visitor. And this would not have happened without the Defiant, because it is the Defiant and its warp core going a little bit crazy and creating what happens to Jake and his father. Probably the most moving episode of Deep Space Nine. Definitely would not have happened if it had not been on the Defiant. And
absolutely.
I can't imagine not having that episode.
Absolutely. And the Defiant itself played a role in that because, as we talked about at the beginning of the show, you know, there are some flaws with the Defiant. It's basically, it's an overpowered ship, and it has a lot of glitches that happen in the systems that don't necessarily happen in other Starfleet ship designs. And so the thing that happened there to throw Sisko, you know, into that kind of, how would you describe it? He's kind of out of phase with our reality, I guess, in that case, right?
Yeah, he's just out of phase with our space-time continuum.
Oh, that's all.
You know, the norm.
Just like
the
when he's sitting behind the piano, right? When Avery's
right, yeah.
Kind of out of phase with the rest of us. He's in his own world somewhere. something that, you know, probably the unique characteristics of the Defiant did play a role in that. So, but you know, the list can go on and on. Lots of little bits here and there that the Defiant was important to stories. Some of them, of course, you could replace it with a runabout. But the basic point we're making here is that the addition of this type of ship to the show allowed them to tell a lot of stories that the station remains the centerpiece, but it allows them to get out and do things that they otherwise wouldn't have been able to do, and even a runabout would not have let them do. Because, like I said, it's kind of like the SUV of Starfleet.
Well, Chris, you know, kind of talking through some of those episodes, this is a ship, you know, we've talked about, is just kind of really born to fight. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's the Defiant and the Deep Space Nine crew, along with Admiral Ross and then, of course, General Martok, really leading the front lines of this battle against the Dominion and the Cardassians. And, you know, so what kind of role do we really see, you know, the Defiant playing in the Dominion War? And do you think that there might have been a different outcome if a ship like the Defiant hadn't been on the front lines?
Now, that's a good question. The show would not have been nearly as exciting. The battles would not have been nearly as exciting, but for us as a viewer,
so true.
I mean, for the Federation, would the outcome of the war been different if the Defiant had not existed? You know, I don't know if I can definitively say that would have been the case, but the Defiant, it's kind of like, okay, we're both football fans, right? On a football team, when you have a quarterback who is a great leader, you have a quarterback who, you know, is always going to find the open receiver, who's going to take care of the ball, who's not going to throw an interception, who's going to make the right decisions. And all the players look up to that quarterback. And when he's on the field, they all have more confidence in themselves. Like, they know they can win. I feel like the Defiant is that ship to the rest of the fleet. You know, it's smaller than the rest of the ships. It's just one ship. But I feel like the fleet knows that when the Defiant is in front of them, when the Defiant is leading them, they all feel more invincible. They all feel more like they're going to prevail.
I think you're right. You know, immediately brings to mind Favor the Bold and Sacrifice of Angels, that, you know, the Defiant, I think, is really able to break through those enemy lines because of the way that it's made. It has the ablative armor. It has the souped-up weapons. It's quick and it's nimble, and it's able to punch its way through. Whereas, you know, something as unwieldy as a, you know, galaxy-class starship would never have been able to make that run that the Defiant goes on. And a plus, you know, you put Dax at the helm, and you know, you're shooting like a bat out of hell. And so there are some places where I really see that. The design of the Defiant and it being on the front lines in those battles actually does turn the tide. You know, without Sisko getting to the wormhole in time to talk to the prophets, all of those reinforcements come through the wormhole. So, the Defiant and her strength, really, I think, allow her to make it through a hole that no other starship was going to make it through.
That's a good point, yeah. And if we look at a few of those engagements, of course, the Defiant mined the wormhole in the first place. But you talk about some of those runs, you know, the Defiant, the one you were talking about there, where they destroyed the Dominion sensor array in the Argolis cluster, and A Time to Stand and Behind the Lines was, of course, critical. And like you said, it's a Galaxy-class starship would have never been able to do that. Then in Tears of the Prophets, the Defiant and the Rotaran, the Klingon ship, worked together to disable the orbital weapons platform in the Chentauka system. Again, that's something that the design of the Defiant really helped allow them to achieve that victory in the war that another ship wouldn't have been able to do. And it was a very, very key victory. You know, it was something that without that, maybe the tide of the war would have turned towards the Dominion more quickly. Now, the Chentauka system became a really big flashpoint, right? Because that destruction of the weapons platform was the first battle of Chentauka. But then in the second battle of Chentauka, the Allied forces lost 311 ships, with one of those actually being the Defiant itself. And that's something I also loved about DS9, that the Defiant at that point had really become a character on the show, just like the Enterprise is a character on TOS and TNG. The Defiant had really become a character in this war, and they destroy the ship and saying, look, this is serious, what's going on here. This is a war to decide the fate of the Alpha Quadrant. Even our little ship here that has been the inspiration for the fleet can't make it through this battle, and it's gone.
Yeah, and I thought this was really smart. You know, they had created the Defiant and brought it on, and they decided, you know, we needed some consequences to this war for this crew. We couldn't let them get away unscathed. So Nog loses his leg, and then we actually lose the Defiant itself. And what I loved about the loss of the Defiant in The Changing Face of Evil was that you realize just how dire the situation was. I mean, the ship seemed nigh indestructible in so many battles, and when it is just obliterated by the Breen weapons, it throws you for a loop because you're really not sure if we're going to win this war. I mean, we all think we're going to win this war while we're watching the show, but that just really puts it on the line for what's at stake here. You know, Starfleet's, you know, mightiest, powerful little ship is just blown to bits. And it's a great scene too. I mean, it's a fantastically rendered scene, especially for the effects at that time. And so, yeah, this is a really scary thing that happens in this episode. So I really applaud them for going this far in this episode.
Right. And then, of course, in a sense, it's kind of a reward to Sisko and his crew for all of their work during the war, more so than anything like a reset button or something. But they do get a new ship. But they get the Sao Paulo, which is then renamed the Defiant. And they didn't make it the Defiant A or anything. They just made it the Defiant. So, you know, we lost that ship, but Sisko does get his ship back in the end.
Well, and I do think that it is a little bit funny, the reason that we don't get it renamed. And really, it just had to do with what it would have taken to redo the model at that point.
Right.
Yeah. Because it's also named, it's still the NX-74205 instead of NCC. So they should have changed that as well, but they just, it was going to cost too much.
That's true.
So, you know, that might, if you want to change something in DS9 Remastered, that might be something to change. CGI wise, because that would make just a little bit more sense. I would be okay with that change.
It could be, if you're a stickler for those types of details, like the next ship has to be named
with
a letter in.
Chris, Star Trek fans are sticklers for everything.
For me, I actually, my take on it, and I kind of like it, is that it's just renamed the Defiant. It's given the same serial number. And it's like honoring the original ship by saying that, I don't know, it's kind of like the fighting spirit of that ship or something to me. It's the ship did so much, and it was so much a part of Sisko and the crew and their war efforts. And in a way, I guess in a way you could say it cheapens the ship by saying, oh, here's another ship, and it has the same exact registry number. And it's still an NX, and it still has the same name. But this is, for me, it's kind of an exception in my mind, where it just, I kind of like the fact that they said, you know, here, you're gonna have an extra life. Because, as I said earlier, it was almost like flying a video game ship anyway. And in a video game, you know, you'd get an extra life, so, for your ship.
I do like that idea, Chris. I like the idea that it's almost as if we've just transported the soul of the old Defiant into the new Defiant, and that makes sense to me. And I really don't care. I just think it would, if you were gonna change anything in Deep Space Nine Remastered, that's something you could do.
And I know that what I'm saying contradicts my position on this type of thing in pretty much every other case, but there's just something about something about the Defiant here. I just kind of feel that way.
You're saying that you're an inconsistent, picky Star Trek fan. I've never met one of those.
never. Don't get me started on those damn Klingon foreheads.
But Enterprise answered that for you, Chris.
Oh, yes. Yeah, they solved it all. It's all perfectly clear. I have no further questions.
Okay, good. Well, Chris, if we ever start that Enterprise show, then you can talk about that there. We're talking about Deep Space Nine.
All right. So, well, I guess, you know, we've covered pretty much everything about the Defiant at this point, I think. Are there any final thoughts that you have about the Defiant, Matthew?
Chris, I do. If you are listening to this podcast and you work for Diamond Select Toys or Art Asylum, please create the Defiant. I love this ship. I will snag it up so fast. I'll make sure other people do as well. Just let me have the Defiant. End of message.
And this has been brought to you by Matthew Rushing, Starship Collector from Texas.
Starship Collector aficionado. Come on, Chris, get it right.
Yeah, I don't have much else to add either, other than I love the addition of the Defiant to Deep Space Nine. I love the types of stories that allows them to tell, even when it's just in its minor moments where it's just transporting them somewhere, because, you know, the space in the Alpha Quadrant, especially during this time period in Starfleet history, was not safe. And it's not really the kind of place where you want to be flying around in a runabout or in a homemade ancient Bajoran ship or what have you. Our crew needed something better to get them around. And it added so much depth to the show. As I said, it really became a character on the show. And as much as any of the other 20-plus supporting cast of Deep Space Nine were characters on the show that we cared about, the Defiant became a character that had a real personality, and it was something that we really cared about. And I couldn't believe when the ship was destroyed. I was like, they actually just did that? And, you know, it was like losing a member of the family. And it just brought so much richness to the show. I'm glad they brought the ship on, and just even how would Worf have gotten into the movie First Contact without the Defiant? Tell me that.
I can't, Chris, because it probably wouldn't have happened. I don't really see Starfleet sending a bunch of runabouts with a Klingon on them as the best way to stop the Borg.
Yeah, probably not. Maybe they would have picked up Worf on their way from their, study of comets to head back to Earth. They would have stopped by and picked up Worf somewhere, because there's always some way Worf can show up on the Enterprise for a TNG movie.
It's like he has a special locator in his boot that tells him, "Oh, the Enterprise needs you. Be ready. We're coming by. We're gonna swing by and pick you up." But only he has that. So, oh, wait. We're doing a movie. We need you. Get ready.
It's right. He's like in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. He's got that like little electric thumb that he can flip it on, and as the Enterprise passes by, they know to pick him up.
Right, exactly.
But seriously, thanks to the Defiant, the way he gets on the ship in First Contact makes perfect sense, and it even allows Deep Space Nine to make a reference to that battle later on, and the ship has to be repaired after the battle, and then it gets returned to Deep Space Nine. And that's nice continuity between different parts of the Star Trek franchise that I really like. And oh, we didn't mention this yet. We should just say this, Matthew, before we go here. The fact that in First Contact, they really, really did want to destroy the Defiant in that movie, and then they beam Worf over. And when Ira Stephen Bear heard that that was what was going to happen, and they're like, "You can't destroy our ship for no reason. Like, it doesn't have to be destroyed. You're going to affect the rest of our series just for some visual effect on the screen. The hell you are." And I'm glad that they just crippled the ship. Because again, that does add some continuity. And there is some, it's only a few mentions, but there is some consequence to that movie that shows up in Deep Space
Well,
Nine.
it's funny, Chris, you say that because I was watching one of the final arc episodes in Deep Space Nine, and they also referenced the Sona. And so Deep Space Nine is actually the
Yes.
only show that references all the TNG movies because that's right, the Deep Space Nine writers, they actually care about Star Trek and referencing the other shows and what's happened in the universe
Well,
around them. So.
let's be fair, Matthew. Let's be fair. Voyager's crew, they were on the other side of the
That's
galaxy. They
true.
didn't know
That's
what was
true.
going on at the
They didn't
time,
have
so that's okay.
the Pathfinder project just yet, so they could hang
No.
out with Barkley.
But DS9 does a good job of referencing other series like that, because there's even the case where they have to go, and the Defiant is part of this too, where they go and they destroy the Iconian gateway that the rebel Jem'Hadar had captured, and that's a great reference as well. So, all right, well, that's it for the Defiant, Matthew. So why don't we tell everyone where they can find us if they'd like to share their thoughts on this tough little ship? They can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. You can choose to send to a show, choose the orb, and that'll come to us as an email. You can also go to our forums at trek.fm/forums. There's a section there for the orb, and there's one for DS9, and you can talk to us and other listeners about the show. And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, and of course on Twitter under username trekfm. And Matthew, what if people would like to look you up personally?
Well, if you would like to find me, I'm on Twitter at MattRushing02. Give me a follow. Let me know you're following me. We'll be able to talk all sorts of fun things like Star Trek Into Darkness. I'm really excited about Man of Steel coming out, all of that kind of stuff. Do the book reviews on the site as well. I wrote the movie review. I've also written the review for the audiobook for Into Darkness, and so you'll find those on the site. And then, of course, Chris, we talk about books and comics every week on Literary Treks. So if you're enjoying Deep Space Nine talk, we've been going through Deep Space Nine Season 8 in the literary universe. So join us there, pick up those books, read them along with us, and then let us know how you're thinking about them. Chris, if somebody wants to find you, and hopefully you're not cloaked, where can they find you?
Yeah, don't worry. I won't be cloaked because Sub Commander T'Rol is with you over
Oh,
there
yeah.
in
Oh, yeah.
Texas.
That's
She
right.
can't
That's
be
right.
here at the same time, so I cannot be cloaked. I would be violating the Treaty of Alderaan if I were cloaked. So that's not going to happen. But so you can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C. And Brian with a Y. And you can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that username. And as Matthew mentioned, you can find me with him on Literary Treks every week. And also you can find me on The Ready Room, where we do talk about Deep Space Nine, but we also talk about all four of the other live-action series, as well as the movies, and sometimes we have special topics as well. And Matthew, sometimes you're there with me on The Ready Room as well. So everyone, please check that out. And also, we would like to invite everyone to drop by iTunes if you like the show and leave us a rating and leave us a written review. We'd love to hear from you. And we'd like to give a shout out to Trey34, who left us a written review just this past week on the US iTunes store. And Trey gave us 5 stars and he titled it DS9 Greatness. And Trey said, "This show is so good. They really know their stuff. Plus, DS9 was a very, very good Star Trek show. In my opinion, this is the best DS9 podcast on the internet. I believe DS9 is the second best Trek, just behind TOS. And thank you for a great show." And well, thank you, Trey, for the really kind words. We're really glad that you feel this is the best DS9 podcast. We just try our best to bring you great discussion about DS9 every week. And it's wonderful that it's connecting with you.
Yes, we really appreciate that. It means so much to us. I know it. For you and me, Chris, to have people sit down and write those reviews. So thank you so much for doing that.
And lastly, before we let everyone go, we would like to remind you to support our sponsors for this week's show. First, there's Squarespace, the best CMS and hosting you'll find for creating a blog, a portfolio, a professional website, or even an online store. And as a Trek FM listener, you can get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. Just go to squarespace.com and use offer code TREK6. And also, there is TrekFan. Remember, TrekFan is not just a Star Trek fan club, it's a challenge. You'll explore new places, you learn new things, and you'll collaborate with other fans to solve puzzles and complete real-life mission objectives. Plus, you'll win great prizes. So face your first challenge and head on over to trekfan.org to find out more.
Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate you doing so. And join us again next time as we gaze into the orb.